The opinions expressed on this program are solely those of its hosts, guests, or callers, and do not necessarily represent the opinions of WTBR-FM, its management, other producers, or sponsors.
Hey, good morning. Welcome to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield Community Radio. Sean Sayre here with you this morning on Thursday, February 19th. It's a little gray, cloudy out there, but not too cold. Felt like it's about 34 degrees outside or so. I'm seeing 31 on my thermometer here, but I think it's just a bit warmer than that out there. And so we'll see what the weather forecast comes in at today. I was hearing a little bit of rain and maybe some ice and things. We'll find out what's going on from the National Weather Service in just a moment. Hari Kumar is my guest here this morning. He is a founder and CEO of Convivo LLC. But we're going to be talking today a lot about AI, and it's always a fascinating topic to talk about. And today is going to be kind of a this is what I subtitle today's show: AI, the dark side or a new hope? So we'll get into that in just a moment. A lot of probably the harder side of AI and where we're headed with that. And it's going to be a good conversation with Hari. Again, it's WTBR 89.7 WTBR FM in Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR in Lee. Watching us on the PCTV Select app and on Access Pittsfield channel 1301. Let's do that weather forecast now and find out what we have coming up in store for us today.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, partly sunny. Highs in the upper 30s. East wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming south this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Cold with lows in the mid-20s. Southeast wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday, freezing rain and snow likely in the morning, then snow, rain and freezing rain in the afternoon. Snow accumulation around 10 inch. Ice accumulation of up to a tenth of an inch. Highs in the mid-30s. Southeast wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation near 100%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Yeah, you know, I can handle the snow. I can handle the rain. It's that middle stuff that always worries me a little bit. The freezing rain and the ice, when you start to hear that, that's the kind of stuff your ears perk up a little bit. And you say, okay, now I'm going to be careful out there. I'm going to decide where I'm going to be driving and, you know, maybe curtail some of my activities and things. You don't want to mess with the ice, especially around this time of the year. So keep an eye on that for tomorrow. We got through one storm that was supposed to happen yesterday and kind of completely missed us. So we got lucky with that. And then I guess there's some other stuff coming over the weekend that we didn't hear about. So check your local weather forecast for those longer range predictions. All right. Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM. Good morning, Hari Kumar. How are you, sir?
I'm very well. Thank you, Sean. Thank you for having me. And I echo your caution to everybody else about the ice tomorrow.
Yeah, definitely. You know, and maybe it misses, like, it's one of those things where if it's just the right temperature, it doesn't turn to ice, you know?
Yeah.
If it's just a degree lower than that, everything turns to ice or maybe snow. So, you know, it's just keep an eye on the sky.
It can be treacherous. I mean, last year about this time is when I fell on the ice and broke my arm. My good friend Dan Morgan up in North Adams made me a nice T-shirt that said, you know, look, this is my 29th consecutive winter in New England. And all I got for it is a broken arm.
Yeah, and this lousy T-shirt.
Right? Yeah, there we go. Yeah. So, yeah, be careful out there, folks.
Oh, boy. Yeah. So, and, you know, that's, I wasn't even thinking of that, but that's absolutely true, right? The sort of side dangers of the weather is you think about getting in a car and all the other things that can happen, you know, whether it happens to you or whether someone plows into you because they can't keep control of their car or whatever. Right. That's one thing. Just going out your back door.
That's right.
Is another potential problem.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you can't prevent it all. You just got to keep an eye on it and see what you can manage. So I guess that's a nice lead in to what we're going to be talking about today. Right.
Perfect.
Which is AI. So as you were mentioning, this is not your primary business, your principal business. You don't work in AI or related technologies, right?
That's right, yes. Yeah, so, you know, I come at this as a Berkshire County resident, as a citizen here, but also as somebody, I have a tech background.
Mm-hmm. What is that?
So I have a master's in electrical engineering. I started out actually working in the field of stochastic modeling of language.
Hmm.
So speech recognition, so some of the automatic speech recognition tools.
Hmm.
You know, and in fact, a lot of that mathematics is actually what goes into the current day LLMs. Hmm. So I'm familiar with the engineering behind these things.
So that's separate and apart from what we're seeing now with AI. So language recognition and things like that doesn't need to rely on AI to work. That's something that you had worked on previously.
That's correct, yeah. And at that time, I mean, what AI now means, you know, AI is a very broad term.
Mm. And when we say AI, we say artificial intelligence, right? We'll start
with
that.
Yeah, yeah. And that's really a marketing term. There's a lot of different technologies under that umbrella. And so, for example, things like automatic speech recognition, mm-hmm. that's what people would now call machine learning.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of different algorithms behind the hood for that that don't have some of the problems that we're seeing today with large language models. And that's a different type of AI. Over the past 3 years, now when people say AI, they generally mean things like ChatGPT,
right.
Large language models.
Yeah, that's the thing that they see in front of them, right?
That's right.
That's working. But of course, what's happening with AI now is that it won't just be a program on your computer or your phone or something that you go to ask a question or to help you write something. It's going to be far more embedded into almost every technology that's coming down the road, right? And probably some things that you don't even realize you're using AI, but you're using AI.
That's right, yeah. And that's actually part of what got me to perk up about a year ago and realize, oh, wait a second, there's more going on here. You know, as you mentioned, like my primary business is actually I have a communications company. I teach people skills like storytelling, public speaking, mm-hmm. presentation skills. But one of the things that I found out, even just as a normal everyday person here in Berkshire County, is a lot of folks use ChatGPT for something that seems very useful. Like, mm-hmm. let's summarize this document.
Okay.
And it seems to really do a good job.
Mm-hmm.
And then I found out, and this was surprising to me, and I think it surprises a lot of people, is that these things actually don't summarize, can't summarize documents.
Hmm.
They produce things that really seem like summaries, seem really useful, but you dig a little closer and you find out that these things will often make stuff up that's not in the document.
Hmm.
They'll miss key points that, you know, is one in one part of the document. And then that leads to a lot of ripple effects. And as you mentioned, we're now not even aware how much of all of our lives are reliant on this. Governor Healey just announced a couple days ago that Massachusetts has signed a deal with OpenAI, the makers of ChatGPT,
mm-hmm.
to produce a chatbot product for state workers in Massachusetts to use for things like simplifying complex regulations.
Hmm.
Wait a second. Now we know that these things actually can't simplify, and they might introduce all kinds of errors. These state workers are going to have to double check all their work. It's going to actually make them have to work harder, you know, and longer instead of saving time. So that's one reason I wanted to raise awareness. It's like, wait a second, we think these things do something useful. When you dig a little deeper and you find out, actually, no. And what are the implications for us in Berkshire County, for our health, for our well-being, for our education, in the legal system, and
yeah.
so on.
Yeah, we're going to get to all of those different things along the way here. So let's ask, every technology that we think of, right,
mm-hmm.
going back to, who knows, the steam engine, the cotton gin.
The wheel,
right? Yeah, let's
sure.
let's go back, way back.
Mm-hmm.
has its benefits, its advantages, you know. We've built things to make our lives easier, to advance technologically, to do all kinds of really good things, too, to mm-hmm. feed people, to extend life. I mean, all the things that we've done to make people healthier, all the things mm-hmm. that inventions that have come along. You know, electricity,
sure.
Computers, you know, you name it, the electric light bulb.
Sure.
All right. All these things had tremendous advantages and, of course, some downside as
yes.
well,
mm-hmm.
some dangers.
Mm-hmm.
Some, I think of electricity as a perfect example
yeah.
where we have, what would we do without electricity now, right? I don't think anyone wants to go back to, you know, 1850 at this point. We want our electric lights and our machines and things like that. The automobile, another thing.
Yeah.
Great advantages, downsides. Automobiles kill, you know, tens of thousands of people every year in the country. Electricity, you can
sure.
be electrocuted. There's lots of dangers along with that. AI comes along. Now we've got something that, again, promises so much, so many good things that could come of it. Mm-hmm. We know that there are some downsides. Mm-hmm. Your position is we shouldn't be using this, right? Tell us that. How do you feel about that?
Yeah, certainly. No, it's a great question. It's something, I mean, you know, I'm an electrical engineer. Of course, I like electricity.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
But there's something different about this technology. And it's not that different from other technologies as well, where we have made that, you know, careful weighing of what are the benefits versus what are the disadvantages. And so there are any number of examples where some things come along that have some benefits, and then we find out that the downsides are just something we can't afford.
Mm-hmm.
So things like asbestos.
Yeah.
Or even right here in Pittsfield, you know, with General Electric and, you know,
PCBs.
Yeah, exactly right.
Yeah.
You know, which we're still dealing with, yep, the long-term effects of short-term thinking.
Yep. And PCBs and asbestos both had really great properties,
yeah,
to use them in, yeah, certain products, right? Fire, yeah, prevention properties or whatever.
Absolutely.
It's just that we decided at some point that, yeah, the risks and the dangers outweighed the usefulness of it, right? So we,
that's
just
right,
decided at some point we can't use those anymore.
That's right. Yeah. So that's where I'm coming from. Like, I'm certainly not a Luddite. You know, I'm a technologist myself.
Yeah.
I love technology. But I think it's important that we do really carefully think through both the benefits and the costs. So I'll come at this now from a couple of different angles.
Mm-hmm.
One is, let's set aside the cost for a second. We're going to get to the costs,
yeah,
right?
Certainly.
But even if we take a look at the benefits, right, the things that these things say that they can do, or the companies that make them say that these things can do, and then you look through that a little deeper, you know, on the surface, my God, of course I want a magic answer machine that will summarize things for me. Of course I want, you know, the sum total of human knowledge in my pocket, mm-hmm, you know, and I can ask an expert. Of course I want a virtual tutor or a virtual research assistant, or some folks want a virtual companion. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But
we've certainly heard stories about that.
Right. Yeah.
Only in the early innings,
yeah,
of that story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But when you even if I take the benefits at face value, and then you take a deeper look and you see how these things actually work, what these things actually do, and you realize very quickly, oh, wait a second, these things actually are not, you know, finding authoritative, credible sources and, you know, producing correct responses. They actually don't know whether they're producing anything that's correct or incorrect. And in fact, mm-hmm, these large language models don't have encoded in them any sense of truth or falsity. So I think that surprises us.
Because they're not thinking.
They're not, right? Thinking. They're not thinking. They're not reasoning.
They're not moral beings.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah. You know, and even
they're programmed essentially to what? What do large language models actually do?
Yeah. So what large language models actually do is they simply produce a sequence of words that are more likely to satisfy a human, that those sequence of words, you know, answer some input prompt.
And where have they gotten these words?
So they've gotten these words through, you know, training on a large, really large but limited set of data.
Mm.
It's mostly text data.
Mm-hmm. Did that start out as machine learning?
That's right. It started out as machine, mm-hmm, learning. Some of the origins of this go back to some of the speech recognition type work that, mm-hmm, I'd been doing,
mm-hmm,
is really okay. In order to recognize speech, you need to be trained on a lot of speech samples.
Mm-hmm.
So there were a lot of efforts to collect, you know, spoken speech and transcribed speech and then text and so on. Until about 10 years ago, most of this work was very manual. You know, you had to have really good quality data.
Mm-hmm.
But with a couple of important technological advances, including the use of big data, the ability to sort through lots and lots of different file data sizes, but also with the advance of GPUs,
mm,
you know, computationally, it was now possible to train up large language models or machine learning models.
Tell us what a GPU is and how it's different than, you know, a CPU. We think of a CPU as a central processing unit of a computer. That's like the main brain chip inside your computer or inside your smartphone or whatever. The GPU, I always thought of as something that helped us play video games.
That's right.
Graphical processing unit, right? So
yeah,
how is it that they made the jump from using it for that,
yeah,
to using it for creating AI?
It's a great question, and it's because primarily of how graphics processing units process numbers.
Mm.
So when you think of a general purpose, you know, like a CPU,
mm-hmm,
you know, it has to do a lot of different things. It has to be able to process information and, you know, do so in a sequential way. But when you think about a video game where you have to generate video, And a video, you know, if you think about a picture is really a three-dimensional matrix, where every pixel on a picture has three numbers, the red value, green value, and blue value. So even just a normal photograph is a large three-dimensional matrix of numbers.
Okay.
A video is now a sequence of those pictures.
Right.
And so 30 frames per second, you've got 30 of those matrices per second. But for video games, you need higher quality. So 60 frames per second, 120 frames per second. All of a sudden now, you need a computer processing chip that's able to process large matrices very, very, very fast. And so that's where GPUs come in.
So they have to be very powerful, basically, right?
Very, very powerful. Yeah, right. And with all that power comes a lot of, you know, electricity usage. So a GPU typically uses up about 100 times more power than a regular CPU, and also generates more heat because it's processing all those numbers. Now, a GPU that was built for video games turns out to be just the perfect chip for processing large amounts of data that go into a large language model, because all of that data is actually encoded as matrices, large matrices of numbers.
Okay. So that's the connection right there.
That's right.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
I think the first time I heard someone say that it was important to have an NVIDIA chip, which is the largest maker of these GPUs, right, was when people were talking about mining Bitcoin.
That's right.
And I said, okay, wow, that's why would you need that? So you need apparently a very powerful processor to be able to do that as well.
Yeah. It's the same math behind the scenes. Cryptocurrencies are built on cryptography, also you know, processing large matrices of numbers. So NVIDIA really lucked out when the video game industry was really reaching a saturation point. There were a lot of really good competitors to NVIDIA when it comes to video game GPUs.
And video games these days themselves are extremely lifelike.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if anyone my age doesn't play video games anymore and you haven't looked at it in a while, take a look, because it's ridiculous how how amazingly, you know, clear they are.
Right, yeah. So NVIDIA really lucked out when cryptocurrency came around, because that provided the first major boost for NVIDIA sales, is the shift over to crypto. And then when crypto collapsed about three, 4 years ago, NVIDIA again lucked out, because that's about when AI began to come in. And NVIDIA's value has incredibly soared in just the past two, 3 years.
Right. Yeah. One of the largest valued companies in the entire world, if not the largest value. So.
Yeah, and they're the only AI company, by the way, that's making a profit. Not a single other AI company. It's been 3 years, 4 years now. Not a single other AI company is making a profit. All the AI companies are actually losing billions of dollars. It's only NVIDIA, and that's because they don't actually make AI. They make the chips that run AI.
Yeah, yeah. Well, like they said, when it came to the railroad boom in the 1800s, it wasn't the railroads that made the money.
That's right.
It was all the companies that sold things to the railroads, right?
Yeah, same with the gold rush. You know, like, you know, if you make shovels for the gold rush, the actual people mining for gold aren't making anything.
It doesn't matter how much gold you find. You sold the shovel.
That's right.
Yeah. Hari Kumar is my guest here this morning on Morning Drive. If you're just joining us, it's 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio. Also listening to us on 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge. AI, the topic here this morning. So how is this technology so different than other technologies we've had in the past? And why does it, what makes this one more dangerous? And maybe, you know, if you're taking the yellow pad out and you're saying pros on one side and cons on the other side, and you get to the end of the cons and you say, almost like you were talking about with asbestos and PCBs, too dangerous, shouldn't use. Why is it? Why is this technology that much different than some of the ones we discussed earlier?
Yeah, that's a great question. It's something I've been wrestling through myself as an engineer. I remember, you know, when I graduated from engineering, one of the things we did at Boston University, we had to take an oath as an engineer to be mindful of the impact of anything that we make as engineers. And this comes back, goes back to in Canada about 100 years ago, anybody could say they're an engineer if they thought they knew how to design something. And what would happen is people would design bridges without knowing how to design bridges, and the bridges would collapse and kill people. So we as engineers, you know, took that very seriously. It was like the Hippocratic Oath. So the number one thing that concerns me about these things is that these things are actually not engineered well. You know, these things are not engineered to produce correct outputs, accurate outputs, reliable outputs, consistent outputs. If you ask ChatGPT the same question a couple of different times, it'll give you different answers each time. that's not a reliable, you know, answer machine.
Yeah. And why does it do that? Why is it that if you ask it the same thing, you get two different answers?
Yeah, it's because of the way these things are deliberately designed. Mm-hmm. So I'll provide a couple of answers here. Number one is just intuition based on understanding how these things actually work. And then number two is a research study that just came out backing up that intuition. Hmm. So the first one is, let's just go with intuition. You know, you don't really need to be an engineer to know this. How these things actually work is they're really just computing probabilistically what's the next likely sequence of words. Hmm. An example I used at the AI debate a month ago was, you know, imagine that I wanted to know something about diabetes. Right.
Yep.
But instead of asking a doctor or asking somebody who knows about diabetes, let's say just I asked 100 people, you know, hey, you know, each of you give me five words that you associate with diabetes. Mm. Right. And so people might give me words like, you know, insulin, mm-hmm. you know, overweight, mm-hmm. exercise, mm-hmm. etc. Mm-hmm. Now, some of those things may seem plausible. And some of those things, you know, an expert in diabetes will say, you know, you don't have to be overweight to have diabetes. Mm. You know, a lot of, you know, people who are not overweight mm-hmm. have diabetes. Mm-hmm. But it's plausible, right? But now you scale that up and you say, okay, let me ask 1,000 people, 1 billion people, and let me ask them for 1,000 words, mm. and let me stitch together a sentence just based on the word association. That's effectively how these things work, mm. is that for every input, they're actually producing a sequence of words associated with mm. that input based on their training data. Mm. So in their training data, they're not actually going and looking up stuff in their training data. They're not trying to find the right answer. They're using the training data to just estimate probabilities. Mm. What's the next likely word given 1,000 words, 1 million words mm-hmm. in the sequence. And they do that by first computing the average, but then they add a little bit of noise to that average because they want to produce novel responses. So that's why the output is always a little mm-hmm. different. It's mm-hmm. going to be a random, so it's really a random word association machine is how these things actually mm-hmm. work.
You would hope that some of that information is, and the word is scraped, right?
Yeah.
Taken, essentially, whether it was by permission or not, from some other source on the internet, whether that was a research paper, whether it was a book published, work of some kind, or, as you say, maybe from other disreputable sources, right?
Right.
Where is it being sourced from? Do we ever really find out? Do we know that it's authoritative?
We don't. We don't know that it's mm-hmm. authoritative, and the large language model also does not know whether it's authoritative. Mm. Until about 10 years ago, most of the work in this field was in actually ensuring that the data coming into these large language models were highly curated, selected data sources. Mm-hmm. Now, a lot of that work was manual, laborious. You had to pay experts to actually look through the data and sure. classify the data, categorize it. And 10 years ago, Google came up with this idea of a transformer architecture, but also with this idea that, like, oh, you know what? Attention is all that matters. You know, you don't actually need to have high quality data. You can actually just feed in a whole bunch of data and get this thing to automatically compute the probabilities of associations. Mm. And that's all that really matters. Mm. That enabled the scaling up of the scraping process. So right now, a lot of these large language models, the way they are trained is that the data that comes in is a huge mishmash of things that are from all kinds of sources. And those are not curated or classified or you know, the few parts that are, they're done by actual humans working in really horrific conditions where some human has to look through some really horrific material and classify those as, you know, this is an example of a horrific crime. You know, this is an example of a child being, you know, having a horrific mm. thing done to them. Mm. So some real human has to do that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the data isn't that. So what goes into these large language models is really a slurry of just, yeah.
just stick it in a blender. It's just the Google blender.
That's exactly what's going on is, yeah.
I just have this vision of all those words in the blender now.
Yeah.
And your stand on it, Hari, is that it isn't that we're going to, that we should learn to live with it, almost, stop worrying and love to live the bomb, if you will, from the classic film in the early 1960s, but that we should be avoiding it, right? That we should really not use this and take every effort to avoid it.
I would say so, but you know, that's where I've come to after about a couple of years now of reading through a lot of the research, a lot of the books that have come out. The second thing I'll add is that intuition that I just shared with you, mm-hmm. it's backed up by research. So just a month ago, a research report is published where these are actual AI researchers who compiled and collected all different kinds of studies that look into the fundamental failures of large language models, the things that these things can't do.
Mm-hmm.
And they categorized them.
Or that they do badly.
They do badly. Yeah. They classified them in three different categories. Mm-hmm. One is they do them badly.
Mm-hmm.
Two is they seem to do them okay, mm-hmm. but it's unpredictable.
Mm-hmm.
And three is they just actually simply can't do them. Mm-hmm. There's the fundamental failure in them.
Mm-hmm.
And it turns out that this paper, by the way, it's called Reasoning Failures in Large Language Models. And so it turns out that these large language models really can't do some really basic reasoning things like counting, arithmetic, you know, congratulations.
Really?
Yeah.
See, now that's surprising to me.
Yeah.
The thing that I can do with my pocket calculator.
Yeah.
Is not something AI does well?
No, it does not. It cannot. The large language models actually cannot do numbers. Congratulations, Sean, as an engineer myself and as a computer programmer. I'm so proud that, you know, we as a human civilization have created a computer that can't add numbers. And it uses GPUs whose number one thing is adding and multiplying numbers.
So if I just go to ChatGPT and I ask it to do a mathematical calculation, it won't do that?
It will, because it has a whole bunch of plumbing around the large language model.
Okay.
But underneath it, it is still using a large language model to try to figure out what you're asking it to compute.
Interesting.
And then it tries to figure out, you know, can I use the large language model to compute it, or can I use something else to compute it?
Mm.
And depending on which path it goes, and it will randomly choose a different path, you may or may not get the right answer.
Mm.
This is why Microsoft, when they introduced Copilot into Excel, they had a big old disclaimer saying, here's an AI, you know, tool in Excel. Please don't use this for any context where you need it to be accurate, reliable, or consistent, like legal, financial, accounting. Mm. What do people use Excel for? It's for financial and accounting
purposes.
Yes, it
certainly is. Yes. And sort of that leads me to the next question, which is, you know, the major tech companies, which are essentially the ones that are owning and running and developing this technology, right?
Mm-hmm.
There is no mom and pop shop that's running an AI front, right?
I mean, that's right. Yeah.
These are the big boys. These are, you know, your Googles and your Metas and a couple of new entrants, I think OpenAI and Anthropic.
Yeah.
You know, those are companies that I think most people hadn't heard of before this all got started. But you mentioned Microsoft.
Mm-hmm.
And so Microsoft probably thinking, well, we got to get into this game, right? Because we can't have, you know, we can't have our stuff go extinct.
Right.
Everything's going AI. We've got to have AI in our products. So they put it in Copilot, which I don't think has had a tremendous amount of uptake from people, right?
No.
People have not just jumped on the Copilot bandwagon.
No.
But that leads me to the next question, which is that at some point, all these systems that we'll be working with will have some sort of AI underlayment, right?
Mm-hmm.
There'll be something in there, whether you think you're using it or not, it'll be there. So how is it then that we go on an AI diet and not use this stuff when it's going to be everywhere?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's why I'm here, is to raise the awareness. There's a couple of things there. I mean, one is knowing that even though these companies are rushing to put AI into every aspect of our lives, it's not cheap for them.
Right.
They're offering it to us for free, but it's costing them a lot.
Mm-hmm.
So even, you know, you mentioned these are the big boys, and these are all boys, all of these companies. But even something like OpenAI started out as a nonprofit, right? But about 5 to 10 years ago, they aggressively shifted. This is when Sam Altman became CEO of OpenAI, and decided that instead of actually developing AI in a collaborative, open source kind of way, the way that science normally is, you know, is done, Sam Altman decided to actually make it a competition and to rush something to market, to beat the market, and to win the market share for AI. That's not how you develop science, right?
Right.
There's not something like, let's beat the market to science. So, but to do
there's just too much money to be made.
There was too much money to be made, but they also needed a lot of money. They needed to buy up a lot of compute.
Hmm.
And that's when OpenAI entered into a partnership with Microsoft. So Microsoft invested $1 billion into OpenAI and provided them with compute about 5 to 10 years ago.
Hmm.
That partnership between Microsoft and OpenAI is actually what caused the rise of ChatGPT.
Okay.
ChatGPT would not exist if it weren't for Microsoft actively subsidizing a lot of the compute. So there's a heavy financial stake that Microsoft has in OpenAI, and a heavy financial stake that OpenAI has. So even though they're new, they're not small. OpenAI is huge, and it's losing huge amounts of money. So if, that's why
sounds like a great business model.
It's I mean, like, you know, I'm a small business owner. I just went through E4All at Berkshire in Berkshire County. I'm a graduate of the One Berkshire Leadership Program. You know, I'm on
great
the board.
Program.
Amazing program. I'm on the board of the nonprofit center of the Berkshires. In all of these environments, right? Whether I'm starting a new business, whether I'm involved in the economic development at in Berkshire County through One Berkshire, or whether I'm concerned about nonprofits, any of us, you know, like if we say like, "Hey, I've got this idea, but it'll lose, you know, 2 to 3 times as much money as you give me
for years and years.
And oh, by the way, it's a magic box. I can't tell you how it works because I actually don't know how it works. Give me the money." You know, no, that's a very responsible way to do things.
Well, if you like that, I've got some tulips in Holland to sell
exactly
you.
Exactly right.
Hari Kumar is my guest here this morning. We're reaching that top of the hour break already. That's gone by so fast. And we've got another half hour to talk about the dark side of AI. Again, I'll call it the dark side or a new hope here this morning.
The Star Wars.
Yeah, you've got to add that in there, right? Because there's got to be some connection. So we'll take that break now and we'll be right back to talk about the human side and what impacts AI could have in the very near future. This is not science fiction, folks. I said Star Wars, but you know, it's here. It's not in a galaxy far, far away. So we'll talk about that in just a moment on the other side of the break. This is Morning Drive on 89.7 WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Stay tuned for more Morning Drive here on WTBR-FM.
This is Pittsfield Community Radio, 89.7 WTBR-FM Pittsfield, 88.1 WSBR Lee.
Support for WTBR comes from Greylock Federal Credit Union, proud to support high school arts and sports programs to help our community thrive. Greylock Federal, with locations throughout the Berkshires and online at greylock.org.
And from UCP of Western Massachusetts. UCP of Western Mass is hiring full and part-time opportunities to provide a life without limits for people with disabilities. For more information, ucpwma.org/jobs.
Will you be an angel for our WTBR DJs? Every day our DJs are cold, hungry, sad, and lonely, and they are crying out for help. For only 30 cents per day, WTBR can provide them with clean studios, microphones, audio board, and much, much more. Go to WTBRFM.com and click the donate button and become a friend of WTBR. For only $8.97 per month, you can put some smiles on these faces. WTBR, for the love of radio.
Music education in the Pittsfield Public Schools builds skills for the future.
I love the true meaning of hard work because the flute is very challenging, but to play a whole song on the flute is amazing.
Music has made my life different in a few ways. First, I got to learn how to read music. Second, I got to know how to play an instrument that is complicated to learn because you can't look at the keys.
Students in music education know the true meaning of hard work and patience. Support your school's music program.
Hi, my name is Bill Sturgeon. I am the host of WTBR's Morning Drive. We air every weekday morning, 7:30 to 8:30. The goal of my program is to inform, educate, and have a few chuckles along the way. We have wonderful guests, political, arts, actors, musicians, teachers. I look forward for you to listen in or watch us on PCTV. Thank you.
Support for WTBR comes from Berkshire Community College. Free community college for any Massachusetts resident without a bachelor's degree at BCC. Find out more at berkshirecc.edu. And from Sundrini Awnings and Home Improvement, providing awnings and canopies in Western Mass. Retractable awnings, retractable screens, gutter and gutter protection systems, commercial awnings and screen rooms, customized solutions available. Online at sundrini.com.
Radio for people who used to love radio. Welcome back, WTBR.
And now back to the Morning Drive on WTBR-FM, Pittsfield Community Radio.
Yes, welcome back to Morning Drive here on 89.7 WTBR FM, Pittsfield Community Radio, 88.1 WSBR in Lee, Lennox, and Stockbridge, also on the PCTV Select app and on Access Pittsfield Channel 1301. Thanks for being here this morning on Thursday, February 19th. Kind of a cloudy gray day out there, but not bad considering we made our way through the big deep freeze a couple weeks ago. Happy that that's behind us now. Hari Kumar is my guest here this morning, the founder and CEO of Convivo LLC, but talking today about AI and the potential dangers to humanity. Nice, brisk, fun topic for the morning drive. And we'll get right back to that conversation in just a moment. First, one more look at your weather forecast from the National Weather Service.
WTBR radar weather for the Pittsfield area. Today, partly sunny. Highs in the upper 30s. East wind around 5 miles per hour, becoming south this afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy. Cold with lows in the mid-20s. Southeast wind around 5 miles per hour. Friday, freezing rain and snow likely in the morning, then snow, rain and freezing rain in the afternoon. Snow accumulation around 10 inch. Ice accumulation of up to a tenth of an inch. Highs in the mid-30s. Southeast wind 5 to 10 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation near 100%. Weather forecasts for WTBR-FM are provided by the National Weather Service.
Okay, keep your eyes on the skies there for that rain, freezing rain, ice potentially. We're hearing about 10th of an inch is not a huge amount of ice, but it's enough to make things messy. So I would say just keep an eye out and make some smart decisions out there, both while you're on the road and even in your backyard. Just be careful out there. It's very slippery.
Yeah.
Very slippery. So welcome back to the show. Hari Kumar, thanks for joining me again this morning. Fascinating conversation, as I knew it would be here this morning. Let's get into some specific areas mm-hmm. where AI looks like it's going to have sort of a major impact to us humans mm-hmm. in our normal lives. And maybe it already is. Mm-hmm. But the environment and energy.
Yeah.
What are some of the impacts of we hear about the data centers being built
yes.
and the amount of power they need, and we need to ramp up the amount of power that we're generating and the water usage and the cooling and all that stuff. How is that going to affect us and when?
Yeah. So the costs of AI are already here. The impacts are already here. The benefits are not here. the potentials are not mm-hmm. here. But the harms, the proven costs are here. One way that cost is already here is just in the energy footprint and the environmental footprint mm-hmm. of these AI data centers. So these large language models, they're not just in a cloud somewhere. In order for them to operate, they need tremendous amounts of these GPUs. Mm-hmm. And those GPUs have to be powered by tremendous amounts of energy. Mm-hmm. How tremendous? I've got some numbers here for you.
Yeah.
Last year, 2024, so I know we're in 2026,
yes.
but 2 years ago, 2024, the last year for which we have the numbers for, mm-hmm. all data centers in the U.S. took up as much electricity as the entire state of Ohio.
Wow.
Right? Yeah. In 2 years, all U.S. data centers are projected to use up as much energy as the entire country of Germany. Mm. Numbers are 178 terawatt hours in 2024. That's projected to go up to 450 terawatt hours in just 2 years.
And I don't think anyone can really wrap their head around what a terawatt is.
Right. Yeah. So, but the important thing to know is that that is more than a doubling of energy consumption just for data centers in just 2 years. Historically, though, the energy consumption by data centers was actually plateauing and projected to go downward. Because a lot of these tech companies had made significant investments in making data centers more energy efficient and more climate conscious, all of the tech companies have backed away from those commitments. So the impacts of the AI data centers in terms of energy use have just skyrocketed in the past 3 years. And it's already posing a tremendous strain on the electricity infrastructure. And how does this impact us?
Yeah.
Everyday folks here in Berkshire County, our electricity prices are going up, right? Our gas prices are going up.
Supply and demand, essentially, right? There's more electricity needed than we can produce.
Yeah.
And the simple Econ 101 means prices are going to go up.
Yeah.
So why is it they have to go up for us? We're not using more electricity.
We're not. But the providers of the electricity, they're providing this electricity and they're responding to this demand.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're raising up the rates for their entire customer base.
Yeah. And what kinds of electricity is being brought online to meet this demand?
Because the demand is the has spiked in such a short time frame, the primary sources for powering all this electricity is fossil fuel sources. And often in the U.S., it's primarily natural gas, but also coal plants.
Yeah.
Coal plants that were scheduled to be decommissioned are now coming back online. And more and more natural gas plants are going up. And this is one reason. It's not the only reason, but it's one reason why natural gas prices are also going
up. And that's not just an American thing, right? This is worldwide.
That's right.
Although probably most acutely here in the United States.
Yeah. Here in the U.S., the primary mix of fossil fuels is natural gas and then coal. In many other parts of the world, it's actually more coal. And so that's even more dangerous.
Right. And so obviously that has a direct effect on climate change.
That's right.
That's another problem that is, so even if we were trying to meet goals of bringing that down, we have this major new technology that wants to grow by leaps and bounds, needs to bring all these energy sources online. Does that actually set us back for the environment?
Yeah. The last 2 years, the U.S. has saw its carbon emissions actually increase for the first time in over a decade. For the decade before that, you know, we were actually beginning to track downward in our emissions. But the last 2 years, our emissions have begun to go up again. And it's primarily because of all the investments into AI.
Right. All right. How about the effects on learning and thinking? Because again, we talk about the ease of being able to pop a question into ChatGPT and have it spit out either a summary or writing a whole thing or creating a picture or a video or anything like that. How is that going to change the way people learn and also their thinking skills?
Yeah, this is actually one of the more insidious effects of this thing. And it's why the comparison to asbestos is appropriate, or lead paint. it's causing brain rot. What happens with these things is these things are designed to build dependency. These tech companies know how to exploit our very human tendency to want to trust something that seems like it's speaking to us.
Well, certainly Mark Zuckerberg knows what that's like because he was just on trial yesterday having to answer some of those questions of whether his technology was addictive.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And in these tech companies, that's talking about social media. And we now know a thing or two about how damaging social media is. Yeah. And we're all addicted. I'm addicted to my phone.
Sure.
A lot of us are addicted to social media. It's really hard.
Yeah.
And so
there's going to be an entire generation, probably one or two generations that are alive right now that don't remember a time before any of these devices.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Some of us still do.
I do. But
it was a different time.
It was
that's
a different
what
time.
We'll say when we're old and gray, right?
Yeah.
Is that that's going to happen?
Yeah. But for even for us, oldies and grays, we've gotten so dependent. It's hard for me to imagine
not
reflexively checking my phone.
Right.
So then what's the impact now when that interface becomes even more slippery and more invisible? And we now have this supposed answer machine. And I'm not even talking about students. I'm just talking about us in everyday life. And we begin to rely on the outputs of this machine. And it might initially seem like, oh, it's just helping me get unstuck. I'm using it for brainstorming. I'm only using it for brainstorming. I'm not going to use it for anything critical. But even for brainstorming, that's now something that we begin to, it becomes like, high fructose corn syrup. It's a little bit of brain candy. It becomes the easy way out to try to get unstuck with some ideas.
And eventually it'll be the only way out because you won't ever have learned the process for actual brainstorming. You got the white piece of paper in front of you.
Yeah.
How do you get over that hurdle, right? Anyone who's had to write something, you know that you have to, get those words down on paper and then put it together and then come to a cohesion of some kind. And if you have a product that's doing that for you, will you ever learn those skills?
Right.
That's the question.
That's the question. Brian Ricca, the new superintendent for the Southern Berkshire school district wrote a great op-ed in the Berkshire Eagle about a month ago, 2 months ago, where he raised this exact point. You know, he said, like, the most effective learning, the thing that really sticks with you is learning through friction, is learning through that really hard process. And sometimes that process is lonely, but sometimes that process, one of the ways to get unstuck is you talk to another person. And more and more what we're finding is that folks in the workplace say that, you know, oh, I'm just going to rely on asking ChatGPT, when before I would have asked a coworker. Like, oh, you've just lost a really important human way of working through ideas with other people because you think this machine can do something quicker for you, and it actually doesn't.
Effects on the business climate, the economy, jobs. I think that's probably one of the biggest things that people talk about is this technology is going to decimate jobs, a lot of jobs, maybe a lot of entry-level jobs, people getting their first experiences in work.
Right.
AI might take some of that because it's easy, it's low-hanging fruit. You pick that off and you say, okay, we don't need these people for these jobs anymore.
Yeah.
What jobs will there be for us?
Well, I'm actually optimistic on this one because it turns out that when businesses actually try doing that, they realize very quickly, oh, these machines actually can't do what we thought they do. Now we got to hire these folks back. So there was a company that I'm blanking on the name about 2 years ago. Klarna. Klarna is this a payments app company. And they decided to get rid of all of their customer-facing staff because they're like, oh, a chatbot can answer questions. And they very quickly realized, oh, no, the chatbots hallucinate. They produce wrong answers. On the company.
And people probably don't like interfacing with the chatbots when they're looking for an answer for something, right?
That's right.
They want to get a human.
They want to get a human for two reasons. One is they want to trust whether the answer is correct. And two is if they get a wrong answer, they know who to hold accountable. A chatbot made by a company like OpenAI, for example, like going back to Governor Healey's, I think, mistaken decision to sign this contract, the chatbot made by OpenAI for Massachusetts state workers, who's liable when that chatbot gives a wrong answer? It's not OpenAI, right? It's the poor state worker who's being asked to use this thing. Not even the state of Massachusetts is going to be liable to that. So that's the first thing, is these companies are rapidly realizing, no, that's marketing hype. The second thing, though, is you don't have to just take anecdotes for that. The National Bureau of Economic Research just came out with a preprint working paper that's under peer review right now, just came out this month, February 2026. They surveyed over almost 6,000 CFOs, CEOs, and executives in companies across a whole range of different sectors in the U.S., U.K., Germany, and Australia. And they found through talking with these actual executives, they asked them, okay, how much of an impact are you seeing from AI use on employment and productivity? 80% of these folks said they are seeing no impact on employment or productivity over the past 3 years of their, and 70% of these companies actively use AI, right? But 80% of them say there's been no impact. Even so, these executives are forecasting a 1.4% productivity gain over the next couple of years, a 0.8% increase in output, and a minus 0.7% in employment. Those are minuscule.
And certainly the effect of productivity, right? I think everyone expects that businesses will be more productive when they've got this technology, depending, of course, on what the cost is, right? The actual cost to the companies, which many of them are going indebted for and maybe, you know, not ever come out of that debt. But the fact is they can be more productive if they're using the machines and not the people. The people cost money.
That's right.
They're, you know, they've, they've got sticky things like they need health insurance, you know, and they have to pay rent and, you know, or they have to pay a mortgage. They have responsibilities in their lives. Machines don't. They just have a spinning hard drive and a GPU, and you know, you have to take care of those and cool them off, and that's basically it. So productivity, I'm not surprised. I am surprised though that that there aren't more job losses, and that you're hopeful that maybe that won't play out the way that the doomsayers are saying.
That's right. Yeah, because the job losses, it's really a misnomer to think that these things can do something. You really do need a human to operate your business, right? And for the reasons I just mentioned, like who is liable when something goes wrong? You know, it's you. You're the owner of the business. The person that runs the business is liable for that. The other thing that people are realizing is that even the productivity gains are illusory. Studies, Harvard Business Review and Stanford did a study that found out that for every 10 hours of work time gained, you lose 4 hours in actually checking the outputs. and having to redo the work.
Uh-huh.
And redoing work is actually a tremendous morale loss. In the construction industry, for example, they call it rework. And the cost of doing rework is more than just the time loss. It's that, you know, if you take somebody and you say, like, look, here's something you thought you did right the first time, now you got to redo it. You know, all of a sudden you lose concentration, you lose focus, you lose motivation, you introduce more errors in doing rework. So,
but who's checking that for rework, though? That would be my question, because I know scrolling through social media, you see increasing amounts of, I guess, what we would call AI slop, right? Things that you can just tell because of the pattern of the writing, that it was not written by a human.
Right.
And, you know, skip, 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 because I'm not reading that. I just, you know, as interested as I might be on, you know, Susan B. Anthony or whatever, I'm not going to read five paragraphs that was obviously just scraped and written by AI in a terrible writing fashion, right?
Yeah.
And yet, who's checking that? No one's checking that, right? Because it's inefficient to check it. You just say, you know what? Just create this article for me and gain me some clicks on the internet. That's all I need you to do. I don't care that it's accurate. I don't care that it's, you know, spelled correctly or that, you know, the facts are correct. Who cares? Just get it out there and have people click on it. Isn't that really what's happening?
That is what's happening. And that's what these businesses that feel compelled to use AI because they're worried about losing competition. That's what they're missing is the signal that that sends to their customers and their clients. So a study just came out, a marketing study that found that 43% of consumers were less likely to buy from a company if they thought that that company was using AI. All right.
Interesting.
So if you're a company in Berkshire County, then you feel like you have to use AI for marketing, you're likely going to lose customers because you're signaling something with your choice there. You're signaling something that's not aligned with your values.
Yeah. Shouldn't people just be transparent about using it at this point, though? Like, if you're going to use it, tell people you're using it and, you know, explain that so that they aren't thinking that you're passing something off as your own work when it really isn't.
Yeah, I think that's the right thing to do. That's the ethical thing to do. And I think... You have to ask the people that actually use it, why aren't they being upfront about using it? Partly it's because more and more people are becoming aware of the both the implicit and explicit signal that's caused by this. If the primary value that these companies are selling these tools as is it's going to save you time, that really is a signal about like, oh, you're willing to take shortcuts.
Yeah.
You're willing to sacrifice accuracy just because you want to save a buck or two.
Time and money, I think, is the big selling points, right? Saving time, saving money.
Yeah. The big selling points aren't accuracy.
No.
Right?
You know? Yeah. Not at this point.
Yeah.
Now, are you hopeful that this could get better? Are you hopeful? Because, again, we're in early innings here. Will this technology improve? Will it be something that we can rely on increasingly?
Yeah. No, and you don't have to take my word for it. The actual AI researchers and companies themselves behind this are have come out in the open and just in the past year saying, oh, large language models, the thing that we bet the entire economy on, turn out to be a dead end. And just putting more money into large language models is not going to get us there. So that's the AI researchers themselves saying this, right? So that's one reason I don't think it's this thing is actually going to improve. Again, the study that I just mentioned just came out saying there are actually some fundamental failures in large language models. Right. So the only way out is to not invest in large language models, is to actually invest in better AI research, which, by the way, is what the field of AI had been doing before large language models came around. Dagmar Manich, she's the chair of the computer science department in Berlin, at the University in Berlin, has been on a tear saying... In AI research, so much money that could have been spent on really good AI research has been diverted into large language models. So one way to come out of this is if more people wake up and say, let's not spend all this money on large language models. Let's spend money on investing on actual research that makes a difference, including on actual human education and human research and human support, cancer research instead of putting stuff into an LLM to do cancer research.
But is there an actual appetite for that? And that's, I guess, my next question is, we're getting close to the end of the show here. You know, because we have a competitive environment, not only in the United States, but throughout the world, even if we were to put some public policy in place, some guardrails, which we're hearing a lot about, where people want to say, look, before this gets out of hand, we have to know how we're going to manage it, how we're going to regulate it. Right now, it's a really kind of a Wild West in a lot of ways, right?
Right.
Even if we were to manage it, regulate it, put policy around it, will the rest of the world do so as well? And could this ever be avoided, slowed down, stopped? Is that, do you see that being a possibility, or do you see this as just being a runaway event for the world?
No, I definitely see that as a possibility. I'm optimistic. And that's why I'm here.
Yeah, of course.
You know? And that's why,
because I would say it's going to be awful difficult.
It is. Absolutely, it's going to be awful difficult. And that's why I'm a storyteller and a storytelling coach. The best stories are about an unlikely group of people that come together, ordinary, everyday folks like you and me, to battle a dragon that seems bigger than anything any of us can tackle on our own. And that's the underdog story, you know. And I say, you know, we as a country, we're built on rooting for the underdog. So let's root for the underdog here. Here in Berkshire County, we certainly know a thing or two about fighting impossible odds and coming out on that. So that's why I'm optimistic. I think is that we as a citizenry, the more we're informed and the more we push back, the more that results actually matter. And we're seeing this all across the U.S. Small towns are actually stopping data centers in their tracks.
Well, that's the question, right? It's what does the pushback look like? Because obviously there are other things in our national politics right now that are sort of taking a bit more of the focus, you know, detention centers and the stuff going on in Minneapolis and everything else. That, just imagine, I can't even explain it all what's going on right now because it's coming out at muzzle velocity, right?
Yeah.
That's the key term. And yet, here's this other story about AI that we're talking about today, which could be equally and in parallel, another very, very dangerous event for humanity in general. And one of the questions I didn't get to answer, ask you, and maybe we'll just touch on that, is the effect of AI on the defense industry and on security and privacy, things like that.
Yeah. And these two tracks are actually in parallel and they're related, right? So AI and fascism are two sides of the same coin. It's one reason I'm I see them as that struggle. And the more that people realize that actually a lot of these AI companies, most of them, if not all of them, are very much in support of the current administration, very much in support of all of that, the horrible stuff that's going on. A lot of that horrible stuff that's going on is actually powered by some of these AI products under the hood. OpenAI, again, Governor Healey just signing a contract without telling us citizens. OpenAI, one of the founders of OpenAI is one of the biggest supporters of this regime. So to connect those two things together and to remind people, like, look, you know, if you're concerned about the decisions that this administration is taking and the things that are happening to our fellow citizens and to residents here in the U.S., that's also part of the picture when it comes to these AI companies and their investments and their use in defense and weaponizing these products. And that's the other thing to be aware of is that, like, I don't believe in the doomsday scenarios, like the Terminator type stuff.
Yeah. Right? Well, I did have that as my last question. Is this leading to an extinction event?
It's not leading to an extinction event. It's this thing is evil, but it's evil in the banal ways that we're used to. This is evil in a big business sense.
So it's not the Death Star? Going back to our Star Wars motif,
it's not the Death Star. It's just, you know, private equity and, you know, corrupt, soulless billionaires selling our values. And we as citizens can stand up to that. We've stood up to that before. We've won before. And, you know, here in Berkshire County, we know a thing or two about fighting back and starting revolutions.
Yeah, I think we have actually anything to do about Shays Rebellion.
That's right.
Or anything like that. Massachusetts has a long tradition of pushing back, don't we?
Yeah, so let's be proud of that. Let's not be cowed. Let's not be intimidated. And let's find community and solidarity. We're all in this together. Yeah. Let's not lose our values.
Individually, Hari Kumar, what would you tell people to do with AI? They've got it at their fingertips. It's in many, many products, and it's going to be in more products that they use every day. You're basically saying avoid it at all costs. How do people do that?
I would say the first thing to do is just to ask questions, you know, like, why do I really need to use this? Do I feel like I need to use this because it'll save me time? If so, then what is the thing that's causing me pressure for time? The second thing is, you know,
I think people would answer a lot of things.
There's a lot of things that are causing pressure. And I get it. Yep. I'm there. I'm just a solopreneur. I'm trying to start my business, you know. And then to say, like, just be very, you know, we say we want to do critical thinking. So let's just be really critical in how we think about this and say, let's make a choice and say, look, I'm going to value, if I feel like I'm being pressured to produce something that has to be perfect and polished, why? Like, my business is all about authentic communication. And we're hungry for authentic communication. When we see something that looks too polished, too perfect, we're like, we don't trust it. So look, lean back, lean into that humanness.
I think it's the critical thinking, though, that is in short supply today. And maybe we'll continue to keep that in mind, just like we're keeping the ice storm in mind. We're going to keep a lot of things in mind.
I have hope.
Hari Kumar, thank you so much for being here today. Great conversation. We'll have you back. We'll talk more about this. So many areas that we did not touch on this morning.
Thank you, Sean. And thank you, everybody.
Yeah, thanks everybody for listening to Morning Drive this morning. Again, we'll be here again tomorrow morning live from our WTBR studio here on Federico Drive. Always appreciate you tuning in, listening, and watching the program. Take care, everybody, and watch out for the storm. Take care.